Welcome everybody to this tutorial around the topic service management for real. And the picture above the title shows clearly how and what progress looks like.
During next 30 minutes, you will learn something about ITSM, IT service management in practice when building ITIL-based first level support service desk. We will have a kind of a theory versus real life approach. We will tell you something about the minimum viable product, meaning that what is good enough to get started off with. And we will emphasize an incremental and iterative approach, meaning that you have to progress with baby steps. And in the end, we will give you a simplified incident management demo.
So who are we? There's two of us. We look very much alike. We come from a company called Digi Finland, pronounced in a Finnish way. We are a government-owned company and specializing in digitalizing the whole of Finland. Juhani and myself, Marko, have 20 plus years in the service ITIL world in different companies, different countries, and our lives basically have revolved around ITIL, service desk, service management for this whole century.
So this is a support model concept which can implement it almost on any industry area, customer or service setup. And it's based on three different layers. The customer layer on the top, the customer service layer in the middle, and the so-called expert layer on bottom. Customer organization has made an agreement to purchase some services from a service provider. And when the customer's end users use those services on a daily basis, they will have a need to contact the service provider every now and then. For example, something is broken and they need to report it. So towards that need, the service desk has set up certain contact channels like portal, phone or chat. And through those channels, service desk receives the contacts, records them into your ITSM tool and handles them there according to your predefined processes, like, for example, incident management. Service desk team also tries to solve as many as possible out of those incidents it's receiving, but in some cases it's not possible, and in those times it sends and dispatches the tickets to the second or third tier, where the experts, system or application experts, solve the issue, and then send it back to service desk, and service desk again sends the verified resolution back to the customer end user. And to make it all happen, there needs to be a certain agreement between these layers, between a customer and the service provider. We need to have a SLAs, service level agreements, telling how the service should be provided. Like, for example, how quickly should the incident be resolved, within minutes, hours, or days. And internally, within a service provider organization, there needs to be operational level agreements between service desk and the expert groups to support the SLAs. And the contract between an external third party and the service provider, they are called underpinning contracts. I think we can take the next slide.
Yes. So in reality, the world goes around ITIL, and ITIL has different versions. And in this presentation, we will be focusing on version 3. We recognize that ITIL version 4 is also out there, and a lot of the processes have been renamed to practices. But the truth is that ITIL version changes do not necessarily mean changes to the way things are done. They are more around some fine-tuning and some naming practices. You must have also recognized that there are plenty of different kinds of processes that are expected to be done in the IT service management. In reality, there's only a few, half a dozen, that need to be there just to get started. And what we have found out in real life is that the bare minimum processes are now listed below. You need to know what kind of assets and configurations you have. So you need to know the configuration items, how they are connected to each other, do they have interdependencies, and how the systems are linked together. Once you know that and something goes wrong, the incident management process will restore normality quickly and fix whatever is broken. Also, what is needed is a request fulfillment process. This is more towards ordering something new. It's something that we are already familiar with in web shops, buying, ordering carts where we can buy, for example, laptops or keyboards, mice, anything new that needs to be purchased is done through the request fulfillment. Once the products or services are running, then different changes are needed to be done. And there are some changes that are resulting from incidents. Something needs to be fixed because of the incident management process. But then there are also improvements and developments that are done to services, and they go through a change management process. We also recommend to have a change advisory board to verify that whatever changes are made to a running system doesn't break something on somewhere else. And as mentioned also before in the previous slides, the service level management is something that has to be in place so that the operational side understands and knows what are the criticalities, the impacts, the severity of different kinds of issues. And based on those, we have a priority categorization. So typically, a priority one case will expect the service desk to perform very fast because it's affecting the whole company or all the end user or preventing production or something that's very critical to the whole company's success. Whilst on the other end of the scale, the priority four is typically one end user's one single problem that's just a sad case for that one individual but doesn't really need to be put into any higher priority. And once services are conducted, then we start to understand how things work and knowledge comes into play. We need to capture and store the knowledge so that it can be used and referenced in the future when similar cases come up. There are the traditional knowledge management database type of activities, and then something that is coming up quite quickly is knowledge-centered services, which is a new approach on how to capture and store knowledge, but that requires a whole tutorial of its own. And even if it's not always remembered, don't forget reporting, because that's how you know how your operations is doing and gives you vital information on where to make improvements. So these are the bare minimums needed to get started.
RTSM tool is a crucial part of our service desk. And during past years, the RTSM tool has been referred just to a ticketing tool, but currently is much more. It's actually a platform for multiple features and integrations, and there are features where you can use as a configuration and knowledge repository reporting. You can use it as an automation engine, even development project tool, and as a customer portal. So it's good to have the ownership of the tool inside a team or company, at least to have control over the data and the tool. One of the main points you have to think when you start implementing the tool, that are you going to modify your processes or the tool in the case where those ones don't fit together? Think of a situation where your incident management process doesn't quite fit into your predefined tool incident management process. So you have to think whether to change the tool or the process. And in the past, there's been an idea that you should first define your processes and modify the tool. But currently, trend is moving towards an idea that modifying processes rather than the tool is better. Because changing the tool is actually pretty laborious and even expensive. But this is not a black and white issue, of course. But for example, think of a situation where the next application version of your ITSM tool is released, and if you have done some customization into your tool, it may mean that you need to redo those customizations again and again when the new versions occur. Then purchasing the tool is actually easy. You can just buy the licenses for cloud-based applications and login, but that's only where the work starts. So it's good to use the out-of-the-box configurations. That's what we just talked about in the previous bullet. And buy only the modules and features you need in the beginning. And I would say that the cloud-based solution is a preferred option today if you can use it. But of course, you have to be aware if there are some requirements regarding your customer data. Can it be stored in cloud? And Service Desk cannot implement an ITSM tool alone, because you need so much data from elsewhere. For example, you need a categorization from the product development team to keep the product data and the categorization in line and aligned. And service levels have to be got from the customer teams, you can't just invent them, but you have to go according to the agreements. You need to get the customer data from the account management team to get all the customer end users visible into a tool. So what I'm emphasizing here is that you can't do it alone, but you have to have a project with the right company or organization internal stakeholders. And it's good to create a development roadmap based on increments. And this means that start with those baby steps, start with the bare minimum, start with the minimum viable product, and then add features on top of features. There's a saying that the fool with a tool is still a fool, which means that then empty tool is nothing, but the data, competence, customer knowledge, and all that makes it valuable combined with the tool. I think we can take us next slide.
So now we know what kind of problems we need, know the tool need, and then comes the actual service desk. It is the most underrated workplace in the IT industry, but at the same time, it's the most important one. The funny thing is that contracts are signed with the customer's top management, and they have their own view on how the service desk works. But the real users are the end users, the company employees that contact the service desk, and their feedback is usually viewed in the end user satisfaction surveys. The service desk as such does not invent work. It does things that are instructed to them to be done. They do tasks that have been given to them by the product owners. And that's why it is very critical to involve the operational people when the product planning and project phase is being done. In the industry, there are many views on should the service desk be done internally within the company, or should it be outsourced to an external service provider? And the rule of thumb has always been that you should not outsource it, something that you cannot do yourself first. But then if you are starting from a green field, then you might want to trust some company that does the service desk as their main bread and butter type of activity. So there's no clear answer. The trends have gone from outsourcing everything to Indian big players, but then there are also companies who are insourcing. And so this wave and tide goes back and forth depending on the era. The key criteria why you would like the service desk to be insourced is that you see the need that the service desk has to understand the business requirements. When the service desk is integrated into your whole company and understands what the company is doing, then the service desk provides a valuable add-on service to the whole operations. And when outsourced, you might feel that the service desk doesn't really cater to your business requirements. Whatever you choose to do and how to run your service desk, remember that the outsourcing world, you cannot outsource responsibilities. You only outsource tasks. You still are accountable and responsible for running the service, desk service. And whilst running it, there are different kinds of metrics. And I mentioned previously the importance of reporting. There are two types of performance metrics. One that look into the past in the back view mirror are the lagging performance metrics. And then you have the ones who look forward through the windscreen towards the future. And those are the leading metrics, which also do some predicting work. The leading performance metrics, for example, the first contact rate or first tier resolution rate, average handling times, these are the ones that improve the customer satisfaction overall. So the quicker you get things done on the first contact, during the first call with the person on the line, and quickly, the more satisfied the customers are. And then you have just nice to have numbers of lagging performance metrics, looking backwards into how many incidents, how many calls, how many problems. So those are just numbers and just metrics that don't really help you improve anything. So from the services perspective, put some thought into outsourcing or doing the service desk, performing the task yourself in the company. And again, that's a topic for a long topic for another tutorial.
A team is needed, of course, and we have picked up three roles you can start with. Let me start from the bottom. Service desk specialist. Sometimes they are called analysts or agents. I prefer the service desk specialist. That's the key role of the team and the one that does all the hard work. He or she is the one who receives the customer contacts, takes the ownership of the ticket, and tries to solve it. And service attitude and technical skills, that's the combination needed for those guys. Then incident manager. If a service desk specialist is responsible for those tickets assigned to him or her, the incident manager is responsible the flood of all the tickets, and he or she should be able to see the big picture and find the, for example, the bottlenecks in the process flow and have an analytic approach to make improvements. And service manager is typically a team lead role. He runs the day-to-day business. He does the resourcing, work orders, goes to your customer meetings, and so forth. So good organizing, good cooperation, and social skills needed. Next slide.
The transition is the phase when the project is ending and this actual end result of the project is going into service, into the operational mode. And this is a critical part of the service life cycle and often forgotten. And this can lead then to services which are impossible to operate. So that is why it is good to have a person from the operational world involved in the project phase. And this person could be called the gatekeeper, somebody who is then making sure that whatever comes into the operations is well prepared and can be run. Typically, they use a handover to operations document, which is a list of different kinds of requirements that need to be fulfilled before the service is ripe enough to be supported by the service desk and other support teams. and it involves lists of tasks that need to be done, the SLAs, the categorization of the service, and all the fundamentals of who owns, who's the product manager, who to ask, and what kind of support teams are involved. Once the project is ending and the operational world and starts, there is a hypercare period needed just after the go live, so that you can fine tune the processes, test the incident management and other processes. And in those cases, it's also good to test that the reporting works. So that's why it is advisable not to have any penalties during this period. So it's a testing phase to see that the systems work. So don't forget transition, because we don't want to end up with having services that cannot be operated.
In ITIL, there is a process called continuous service improvement, which emphasizes that the service should be improved in a continuous and well-managed way. It's good to try to find the areas of improvement constantly, like, for example, the bottlenecks in the process flows, and try to find solutions for those. Automation is one of the buzzwords today, and there's a lot of hype around it. I would say it's, of course, something that you have to look at. But on the other hand, even though you try to follow the industry trends around the topic, don't be fooled by the sales speech. There will be sales guys telling that take this tool and you will automate 50% of your tickets next month. That will not happen. But you have to understand yourself, your own processes, your own service. Figure out what would be the easy, repetitive tasks that you could automate. Then shift left idea means an approach where you try to increase the first tier, the service desk resolution rate. And this only happens during the time. But when it happens, you will increase the customer satisfaction, because the customer end user simply gets the resolution fast. And it can also reduce the cost, because you don't have to dispatch the ticket to the second or third tier experts. All these improvements should be made incrementally and in an iterative way. Even though you had a budget of 10 million euros, it will not be possible to establish a world-class service desk in 3 months. Of course, money will make it easier, but it's not only enough, because you need to live your life with the service. You need to learn the customer business. You have to take the lessons learned from your mistakes, and then all that together put into a development plan can only take you further. And that's why it would be very good to have a formal development plan which can be followed. And I would see that as a very good personal goal for service desk manager, to make the development plan and follow it up. Next one.
So coming to a simplified demo of the incident management process, the end user will have an issue, for example, with the workstation. Something is not performing well, and the person then contacts the service desk via phone, and the service desk specialist will be answering the call, taking in the details and the data of what is happening, categorizing the ticket, checking the SLA, putting the priority onto the case, and then trying to ask a couple of questions to see that can the issue be solved in the first tier. In this case, it seems that it cannot be. So the ticket is then forwarded to the workstation team, and the workstation team will be trying to see why the end user cannot connect to the local area network at the office. After some questions, the workstation team recognizes that it's actually not an issue with the workstation and forwards the ticket to the connectivity team. And they recognize that at the office there's a issue with the wireless local area network, and they fix the case and a resolution comes up, and the service desk gets the ticket back, and the specialist who is in charge of the ticket end-to-end life cycle ownership contacts the end user and verifies that the resolution is correct. At this point, the end user confirms that everything is okay and the ticket can be closed. If there were multiple similar tickets coming in, we will have an incident manager then coordinating the masses of tickets to make sure that the resolution teams are working at the best possible speed. And in that typical scenario, the tickets come in, they are solved and closed, and no service manager is needed. So this is a simplified way of how the process works. So now you have learned a bit about the steps in setting up a service desk, what is needed, and what the real life is like. If you have any questions, then please don't hesitate to contact Juhani and myself. At any point, you have our email addresses on the screen. And just to finish off with a couple of takeaways. So start small and proceed with increments. Don't underestimate the power of the service desk. It is the face of the customer, towards the customer. And the ideal versions might change, but the work is still relatively the same. So thank you and goodbye.
Goodbye.